If you've ever spent meaningful amounts of time with small humans, you'll know that getting them to go to sleep when you want them to isn't always easy. But for some parents, it's especially hard. Like these people that Health Report producer Shelby Traynor spoke to last week.
So 12 years ago, we had our first baby and he just didn't sleep from probably 3 months. And we tried everything. We tried chiropractors, we tried doctors, everything on the internet that you could read, and nothing helped. We finally went to sleep school and unfortunately we failed sleep school. So we're pretty much left to our own devices. In desperation, I just went to the doctor and said I couldn't cope. In the end, doctor prescribed melatonin and the poor kid still needs it to get to sleep.
First time dad. We were living with my parents-in-law. I think they could just tell how strung out we were. We got a contact for we called her a sleep witch. So we just had to send audio clips of what the baby sounded like while she was crying. She'd either say, now's time to intervene, give her a pat, do that sort of thing. I bought myself a big bottle of whiskey as a kind of present for myself and to help me get through it. And by the end of that, it kind of worked, but it was pretty harrowing stuff.
Two of my children had CPAP machines for young kids. So it's pretty daunting initially. Having a great, knowledgeable specialist and having that support, we were very fortunate to get on a really positive pathway with that. Definitely just do the consultation, just check it out. It's worth it.
My youngest son, he was probably 6 months old when I first went, I can't do this and I need to call someone for help. I was thinking, how am I meant to go back to work if I'm literally sleeping 45 minutes every night? So yes, this wonderful lady we hired, she actually told me things I probably already knew, but I was too tired to work out how to apply them. All of a sudden, Dan and I woke up one morning and went, we didn't get woken up last night. Have we turned a corner in saying that Arlo has melatonin? Bedtime now to go to sleep because his poor little brain's 100 miles an hour. My favourite one ever was when one of the boys woke up in the middle of the night to ask me, why is there a volcano on Mars but not on Jupiter? I was like, I don't know. That's above my pay grade. Go back to sleep.
But Norman, why is there a volcano on Mars and not on Jupiter?
Oh, I don't know. I fell asleep during the astronomy course.
Well, can I tell you?
Yes.
Well, Mars is a rocky planet, so it has a volcano, Mons Olympus, the biggest volcano in the solar system. Jupiter's made of gas, so it can't have a volcano. So we need to call up Arlo and tell him. Glad that I am so scintillating to you. But what do you do if you've got a kid who can't or won't sleep? Well, there's been a recent review of the evidence into helping otherwise healthy kids to sleep longer without the use of drugs. Professor Harriet Hiscock from the Royal Children's Hospital Melbourne wrote an editorial to accompany the research. Harriet, welcome.
Thank you.
What sleep problems are you seeing most commonly in young people?
I think particularly with COVID, I know we can't get away from talking about that. We've seen an increase in anxiety-related insomnia. So kids just lying in bed worrying about things in the world and that's stopping them get to sleep.
And so when we're trying to intervene with that then, what did the review, because everyone's got their own ideas, right, but this is a review of the evidence, What were the main takeaways from this review?
Well, this review was really just focusing on interventions that had tried to improve the duration of sleep. So it wasn't particularly targeted at kids who might be anxious, for example. But it was pretty surprising that just the simple advice or strategies to try and lengthen the duration of sleep was effective. And overall, it had a pretty modest effect when they looked at complex interventions of just increasing kids' sleep by 11 hours per night, which is not a lot. But when they honed in on the studies...
11 hours per night?
Sorry, no, 11 minutes. What am I saying? 11 hours would be amazing, wouldn't it? It's probably I need more sleep. But when they honed in on the studies that just focused on increasing sleep duration, they actually increased it by, half an hour per night, which over a week, adds up to 3.5 hours, which is likely to have some, flow-on benefits to the child's health and mental health.
And most of the intervention that seemed to be most effective was just earlier bedtimes.
Exactly. And I know that sounds simple, but actually if you've got a kid, that's often quite a challenge to do. So sometimes it was just an advice, you know, to go to bed earlier. But particularly when the trials were involving adolescents, it was then brainstorming with them, well, how can you go to bed a bit earlier each night? What needs to happen? What do you need to get out of your room, devices, et cetera? What do you need to do earlier in the evening so you can get enough sleep?
This study looked at a pretty big age range, 18 months through to 18 years. Obviously, kids along that span need very different things when it comes to sleep. Are there uniting factors or are there certain phases of childhood that we have kind of rules of thumb for?
Look, we have sort of broad durations of sleep that we should be aiming for, and they're obviously longer in younger kids and shorter in the adolescents. But it's also the sleep quality, which this paper didn't look at, because it's not just how much you sleep, but if your sleep's fragmented or not, and therefore the quality of sleep that's important. But I guess overall this paper's really saying in this age where we have a lot of demands on our time, a lot of social media, kids on screens from a very young age, which is impacting their sleep, maybe we need to stop and look at that, put those things aside and actually encourage them to get to bed earlier, because that seemed to have the greatest impact.
This intervention, this review was looking at non-pharmacological interventions, i.e. things that aren't drugs, but we did hear a couple of the parents in that little mix before talking about melatonin. Is there a place for that in most families?
Look, it's melatonin's a second-line intervention. So really the first-line interventions for most sleep problems in children are what we call behavioural interventions, of which this is one of them. But certainly we're seeing more and more children being prescribed melatonin or, you know, sourcing it through online resources, et cetera. And it does have a place if the behavioural interventions haven't worked. And for some children, it's certainly, particularly children with maybe neurodevelopmental issues like autism or ADHD, melatonin can be really helpful in them getting to sleep, but certainly you need to sort of address the behavioural issues first.
When should people be worried about their kids' sleep?
That's a great question. Really, it's being worried if you think that a lack of sleep or poor sleep quality is impacting your child the next day. So are they struggling to get up and function at school or kindergarten? Are they falling asleep on the way home? Are they exceptionally irritable or grumpy? So really it's not really a one-size-fits-all if you have to have a certain amount of sleep per night, but what is the impact on the child's function and mental health the next day is really the telltale signs for parents. And if you've got a kid who is grumpy, who is getting irritable, who is or else, you know, getting quite down and flat or is not functioning the way they used to function, that's when you should see someone if you're worried about their sleep.
We heard Norman joking at the top of the show that let them cry it out. Is there a place for that sort of so-called controlled crying?
Well, controlled crying is different to crying it out. So crying it out is when you shut the door on the child and let them cry it out for the night. And that's certainly not something that we use or condone. But what the controlled comforting or controlled crying is a little bit different to that. You don't shut the door and leave. You go in and out of the bedroom to your child, you know, for increasing time intervals to say things like, I love you very much, but it's sleep time. It's time to go to sleep. And that's been shown to be really effective. And it's also been shown in our studies of randomised controlled trials, you know, 1 year, 2 years and 5 years down the track to have no adverse impacts on the child or the parent-child relationship.
Well, that's reassuring.
Yeah, Harriet, it really is.
Thanks so much for joining us, Harriet.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Professor Harriet Hiscock is a consultant paediatrician and associate director of research at the Centre for Community Child Health and the Royal Children's Hospital, Melbourne.